From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. This morning we're going to talk a little baseball, and then we're going to talk a bit of basketball, preview some March Madness second weekend games as teams will punch their ticket to the Final Four by the time the weekend is over. We're going to do that with Andy Kennedy, former Ole Miss head basketball coach, going to stop by with us in about 25 minutes or so to talk some basketball, talk some hoops with AK this morning. Also in a few mornings coming up, April 7th, the day of Ole Miss's spring game, Chad Kelly is going to be at the Oxford Exxon for a signing, the Denver Bronco in town, 9:30 for that morning there at the Oxford Exxon. Also, Ben Craddock, the Craddock family in Oxford Exxon, if you walk through the door for the signing, you're there, you go, shake the hand, speak to Chad. Ben's going to donate $5 per person to the Magnolia Speech School there in Jackson. We've highlighted some of the work they did with them about a month and a half ago when Ted DiBiase, Chad, and Ben were down there talking to students and different things. So, again, $5 to them, great cause, and you'll be able to talk to Chad there. That Saturday morning, April 7th, I believe, is the date at 9:30. And, again, we're coming to you in the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. You get a great vehicle, great service after the sale. It's just a very easy car buying experience. You get your quote. It's up to you. You can shop it around, or you can let the people at Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience for you the way they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast, and we'll make it even better. All you have to do is tell Corey, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our podcasts. There's a beer garden dropping today. We're taping a greatest pod in the South today. Also taping a soft verbal today. So lots of podcasts. You can mention any of them. $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Also, as we get into this, just something to help out a subscriber at rebelgrove.com. Maybe you guys had supported him and his wife during this. Jared Little, he and his wife Ellen, they lost their daughter recently. Was born with umbilical cord around her neck and passed away shortly thereafter. They're doing a fundraiser March 24th for Project Sweet Peas. Project Sweet Peas is a national organization that basically is a charity that gives money to parents while they're in the NICU to support different things while they are there with infants in intensive care, something that obviously important to me after our two-week stay a couple years ago with that. And what Jared's doing, he's taking a little cue from Neil's golf outing and doing a CrossFit workout. It's supposed to take about 20 minutes, but you can donate flat amounts or donate to the total time. He's doing two rounds of a one-mile run and then 18 clean and jerks for a CrossFit workout. It's supposed to take about 20 minutes, but you can find out more on this at Project Sweet Peas, that's P-E-A-S, .com/Vivian, V-I-V-I-A-N. Good cause, good people there with Jared and Ellen. So if you're curious about that, check it out there. And I'll also put it on the website, or at least bump that post back up. He had mentioned it earlier a couple weeks ago, so I want to bring you your attention here as well. Ole Miss baseball knocks off New Orleans 9-4 yesterday. I think the first team in the country to get to 20 wins, if I saw that correctly. 20-2 now on the season. Big weekend series at Texas A&M starting Thursday, Friday, Saturday for that series. The Rebels and the Aggies. Texas A&M having a really good early season, but having to overcome a series loss to Auburn to open SEC play. A lot of pitching in this one. Texas A&M and Ole Miss have very, very similar stats. Big weekend for both teams. Probably bigger for A&M just because it's at home and they lost the first weekend. But Ole Miss has Arkansas next week. They go to Mississippi State the week after. So important for the Rebels as well. I asked about Gray Kessinger yesterday. He will travel. He missed his second consecutive game against UNO. That was no surprise. Mike Bianco said he just wasn't sure about his availability yet. They were going to test it. They would see where he is. But he will be on the travel roster. Don't know yet if he will play Thursday or Friday in College Station.
So. You worried about Dallas Wolfolk?
I asked Mike about it yesterday, and I actually should have queued this up to play his answer because he sort of avoided the question and then sort of answered it all at the same time. And because my question was pretty direct, I just said, do you expect his velocity to uptick as the season moves on? And the non-verbatim response is that he feels like some of it is the way he has used him, that he's not used him in consistent manners, that it's been somewhat his fault. Dallas was 89-90 when he got here for the spring. I've seen him touch 93, but he's been consistently 91-92, whereas a year ago that consistent was 93-94-95. I mean, it's certainly a tick or two down. We talked to Keith Kessinger about it. I think David DeLucci might have mentioned it as well, if I remember correctly. So it's interesting. It's a concern just because 91 is a whole lot easier to catch up to than 95. I know, genius here and all, but I mean, the kid from UNO yesterday hits a ball out of the ballpark on a 91 mile an hour fastball. At 95, the kid from UNO probably doesn't catch up to it. Just being honest,
pops
so
it up or,
yeah, whatever. Yeah, he didn't square it like he squared it. So no, it's a concern. In saying that, he's only given up one earned run all year, and until it goes squirrely, they're going to keep running him out there as they should. But what's weird about it a little bit is his slider is still very hard. You know what I mean? It's not like everything's off a tick throughout his repertoire. So I don't know. That's a little interesting to me. I don't have an answer for it, but he's certainly down a couple notches. That fastball is rarely getting above about 91-92. So far this season. He threw a lot of innings last year. He threw some innings with Team USA, but he wasn't overworked with Team USA. He didn't really pitch that much. They don't play that much. So it was, I don't think that was a big deal. He was shut down in the fall. I mean, he's been managed well. It just isn't where it was, and we'll see. But, yeah, I think concern is the word. I don't know that panic is the word, but I think it's certainly something to watch, something to follow as we get into the second weekend of conference play. So, I don't know. We'll see. Parker Kiraisi would seem like the most likely person to step in for him should that be needed at some point. Again, I'm not saying it is, just saying that's the most likely person. Parker's been consistently 94-96 with his fastball most of the spring. I mean, he is such an interesting test case because a guy that didn't make the active roster for 2 years, now really blowing up a little bit in his third year. I think Parker is at 21 strikeouts and one walk on the season, if I have that right. I think he's allowed one earned run. And even that was kind of shoddy because that was on that drop pop-up against Georgia State in the ninth inning a couple weeks ago. So Parker's been fantastic, and you could lose him in the draft after getting 1 year out of him this year. You don't really see that very often.
No, you don't see that much.
Kind of a one-and-done in a strange way. And there's been a lot of, you know, extenuating circumstances. Brian Scott Rippey did an excellent job of pointing a lot of those out in a story a couple of weeks ago for the official site. But Parker has been phenomenal. I mean, looking at it now, I pulled it up just because I was curious. He's a 0.71 ERA. He's appeared in 8 games. He's thrown 12.2 innings, and he has 26 strikeouts and 1 walk on the season to this point.
It's pretty good.
It's not bad. A little over 2 strikeouts per inning, and he has allowed 10 hits. That's a little high for 12.2 innings for a reliever, but I'm nitpicking.
Well, throwing in the strike zone. Sometimes a really low walk number is just indicative that a guy's pounding the strike zone, and if a hitter knows that a guy's going to pound the strike zone, he's up there attacking.
Well, it was a lot like Garrett Crochet for Tennessee. That's what I was talking about. He had control, but he didn't have command. Now, Parker's got a much better command than Garrett Crochet, but that was sort of similar deal. I mean, opponents are only hitting .217 off Parker. It's not like it's going poorly. It's all right.
If the scouting report says he throws strikes and nothing but strikes,
you better swing.
You're going to go up there attacking. You're not going to.
It's just like the aggressive guy that swings early in the count. He's probably not going to strike out a ton because he doesn't get in the count to strike out a ton.
Right.
I mean, sometimes this is not overly complicated, just saying.
That's why sometimes strikeouts with baseball players, those aren't viewed negatively.
You would rather have a five-pitch strikeout than a one-pitch ground ball to second.
Absolutely.
Sir?
Sometimes a guy's an eight, nine-pitch strikeout, and it's a hell of an at-bat.
Okay. Just wondering.
Yeah, no.
More of a topic for tomorrow, but while I'm on baseball, a quick look at the weekend. It's an interesting series. Kentucky, 0-3. Arkansas sweeps them to begin the year. They get a visit from Auburn this weekend in Lexington. That could get interesting quick for the Wildcats off to a tough start. Arkansas, number 4, is at number 2, Florida, this weekend. That's a big one in Gainesville. Alabama at Tennessee. Who cares? Mississippi State at Missouri. That's becoming irrelevant quickly if things hold. South Carolina at Georgia. Opportunity for Georgia there. And then in Nashville, LSU at Vanderbilt caps up your week. So, I mean, 4 really quality series this weekend. LSU at Vanderbilt, even though LSU I'm not completely sold on, but I'll still give it to them for now. Ole Miss at A&M, Auburn at Kentucky, and then Arkansas at Florida. So.
For Ole Miss, for Auburn, for Arkansas, those are opportunities. You find a way to win 2 out of 3 on the road in one of those series. And
or LSU, for that matter.
Yeah, you change your season a little bit.
Yeah, so because LSU did survive Missouri, won 2 out of 3 the opening weekend. Yeah. So. Got about 15 minutes before we talk to the former head coach of Ole Miss.
You're going to ask me about the comments made by the current head
well,
coach?
Well, I'm not really asking you about them. I'm just kind of bringing it up. It would be negligent on our part to not. We talk to you every single day, and it's something going on in Ole Miss Athletics today. When he made the comments about the flag and the national anthem, at the end of a very long-winded statement just kind of about the program in general, during the public introduction, what is that commercial for?
I don't know.
There's a volume button. You hit it. It
well,
mutes.
I realize that. I don't know what happened there.
Okay. Made the comments at the end of a very long-winded, not in a bad way, just talking about the program and philosophies and different things. And as soon as he said it, I had kind of two thoughts. I went, ooh, because I know the media landscape. I know where what things get pulled. I know how things get taken. And I thought, maybe I might have barred some trouble there. And then two, because it doesn't really bother me either way, I don't have a strong opinion. I know you don't have a strong opinion.
Not at all.
I kind of forgot about it. I mean, yesterday when we were going through, or I guess the night before, we were going through all the Kermit Davis stuff, and it just never even crossed my mind. It completely slipped in one ear and out the other. And then, in full disclosure, we didn't tape yesterday morning because I was at the media event for the web.com tour thing in Oxford a couple weeks. And, I got a text from somebody going, hey, this is kind of blowing up a little bit. And then it was that thing of, yeah, I'm not surprised. And, man, I just forgot. Like, it almost kind of hit me and went, oh, yeah, that did happen the other night.
I was sitting back in the media room during the public portion. I was literally in there by myself. I was the only person in there. And they were streaming the feed into that room. And I heard him say it. And I remember thinking the exact same thing with, well, that's going to get attention. But apparently you and I are two of like the only 7 people in the country that don't have a strong opinion on this topic. And I get people that get strongly angry at me for not having a strong opinion. And maybe you do too. It doesn't. I stand for the anthem. I'd like to think I stand respectfully for the anthem, but I'll be honest, when you attend as many sporting events as we do.
We stand for a lot of anthems.
It's just like, oh, another anthem.
And you don't cover for baseball.
Right.
I do a lot of anthems.
Just anthems. And so I don't really think about it. I'm not, I'll be honest, I'm not offended by the people who choose to peacefully protest the anthem. I'm not. It does not offend me.
And now they're not protesting the anthem, but there's anthem. A lot of whatever here.
Right.
So.
You all know what I'm talking about. They're using the anthem as
a demonstration tool.
Platform to make their peaceful protest.
Yeah, that's fair.
And when people do that, I'm okay with it, in large part because I think that's sort of part of what America is about.
There's the freedom to do so.
You have freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we can go down that rabbit hole all you want. My point is it doesn't bother me. When the NFL guys did it, I didn't go, "Oh, that's it, I'm done watching the NFL." I just didn't think about it. Because literally once the game kicked off, I forgot about the anthem thing. And the people who are on the polar opposite of that, that doesn't offend me either. The people who are, "By God, I will stand at complete attention, almost military style, and I will put my hand over my heart, and I will stare directly at the flag." I don't have anything against those people either. In fact, I lean towards those people more than I do those who use it as a platform for demonstration. But I'm not offended.
It's a very difficult topic. I mean, I'm trying to stay as real as possible here for a couple different reasons. Number one, obviously, patriotism and national pride are very strong emotional elements for people. Sure. There's no doubt.
Sure.
That is the one thing that historically we've all kind of done in unison is honor the flag and have the whole anthem and stand up thing.
Yeah.
So those people, and I don't mean that negatively, I'm just trying to separate you into groups here. They say, well, it's a really bad tool for protest because it comes off as very anti-anthem, anti-US, anti-country, all those things. And I get that. Optically, that makes all the sense in the world. A lot of the other side of the conversation says, well, protest in general should be things that make you uncomfortable. And whether I believe that or don't believe that, those two thought processes are going to clash without any middle ground whatsoever and not get anywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're not going to have a lot of people that go, well, I have a really strong opinion, but I understand. No, no, no. You have really strong opinions. You're not going to understand the other side in any way whatsoever. I'm saying all that to get to this point.
Okay.
There's been a lot of comments, some coming from former Ole Miss players, Jozon Darby, this morning, and I have no idea what Jozon is doing or not doing. I haven't thought about him in a long time. There's going to be people frustrated by that comment. There's going to be people that potentially have some decision-making in the recruiting process of some prospect at some point that are bothered by that comment. It was probably one of those deals to leave well enough alone.
It was
just because
like
of the landscape of, you know, what's coming. It wasn't right or wrong. That's not my point. The point is, what is the reaction to the comment, no matter what the comment was?
It might have been the very first sign of, hey, you're speaking to a bigger audience now. It those things. And I say these words and people think I'm being critical. I have nothing against pep rallies. I have nothing against public introductions. But those things are sort of like political rallies. You're speaking to your base.
Mm-hmm.
People who are neutral about Ole Miss. People who live, say, 60 miles away from Oxford and don't really care one way or the other about Ole Miss basketball, they don't come to the pavilion for a public introduction of the new head coach. The people who come to those events are people who are fans. They are excited. They're either friends of his or, more likely, they're excited about the program, et cetera.
Yeah.
So it's a political rally. You're speaking to an already engaged audience. And in many ways, you tell them what they want to hear.
The Mississippi State part of it.
What you forget sometimes in those environments is this is on camera. This is being streamed live. And people are going to pick words apart.
And there are 30 sites in the country that love for anything that can be turned into a click.
Yes. And that
is, that was ripe for a click.
It was absolutely right down the middle of Main Street of Clickville.
Yeah. Big flashing sign for that in Clickville.
Oh, it's the malfunction junction where all the interstates converge.
Mm-hmm.
In any city, like in Birmingham, is where 2059 meets 459 meets 20 or whatever, meets the Red Mountain Expressway, all that stuff.
Disaster.
Yeah, malfunction junction. That is malfunction junction of Clickville. It's right there. Everybody has to go through that thoroughfare to get to the other side of Clickville.
Yeah, so,
and so when he says it, people said, "What'd you think?" And I thought, well, he's kind of borrowing trouble here. And sure enough.
Yeah, it's not about right or wrong. It was just about how people were going to react to it, and it was a very clear reaction that was expected from national media members. I mean, that was...
Yeah. Now, I think it's going to pass.
Yeah, it's not.
Because I think, frankly, most people mainstream...
It was good for a day of clicks.
Yeah, most people mainstream are fatigued with this story.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it makes it harder to recruit any one kid, I'm not going to say it was a mistake, because here's what's interesting. That was part of his deal at Middle Tennessee. And when I say deal, I don't mean that in a negative way. They were very uniform in the way that they approached pregame.
I used the word military style yesterday.
Yeah. And I think it was the president, maybe it's the AD, maybe it was both. I don't remember. One of the people at Middle Tennessee said that's one of the things they're going to demand of the new coach, that they continue that. That they got lots of positive feedback from Middle Tennessee fans and opposing team fans about the way that Middle Tennessee team respected the anthem. And we live in a conservative state. We live in the middle of the Bible Belt. And that is a approach that the majority is going to appreciate here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not being negative of anything. I'm just being honest. And so maybe it is, from a calculated gamble standpoint, worth it.
Well, I mean, you're hitting the climate on the head right there. We both are, because we both lean that direction. And we're very hesitant here in having to put in thousands of disclaimers. I mean, yeah. We're proving the point just discussing it right here with people who have been listening to us for 5 years.
On the flip side, there will be people who will say, look at Ole Miss. Look at Ole Miss. Conservative. Ole Miss that had to be dragged into the 21st century.
You allow all the crap to come
up. They went out and they hired an older white dude to be their coach, and here they go.
No context, no understanding, just...
Yes. Rapid fire. Now, is that... Did they feed into that? Yes. You can't talk about this objectively without saying, well, you know, they provided ammunition to those who just spew off without context.
You're right. And look, people that spew off without context, you can't bring context into their world.
You can't rationalize with the irrational.
In saying that, and we got to go in a second. We wrap this topic up. And I mean this truly, because I mean, even, you know, as an alumnus, I'm bothered by this. Is this crap? I mean, I say crap, but in some ways crap, in some ways just whatever. Is this something that Ole Miss is going to have as a tagline on their situation for 100 more years? I mean, at what point do you get to be in your current world? I mean, Ole Miss has made more strides from a racism standpoint, from an inclusion standpoint, than potentially any school in the country. I mean, Oxford is the least most racist place I've ever been to.
Yeah.
I mean, you've lived more places than I have, but you'd agree with that.
Yes.
At what point do you get to be yourself presently instead of your past? Because you talk about a forgiving society, not when it comes to entities.
Well, I mean, it's a vocal minority that
yeah, no, I understand that.
And I don't know the answer. I don't know.
I mean, there is no answer. I'm more just talking.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, and now all the changes on campus, I'm not saying they're bad, not doing that. Again, I'm just saying the realism of this is even the changes on campus keep bringing the conversation back up, the contextualizing monuments and different things. I mean, anytime those come up, you're going to have the conversation again because there's something related to those factors in some way, I guess is my point. So, anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It is an emotional, complicated, complex topic. And, again, I just felt like we needed to discuss it because otherwise would be negligent.
Did.
So. We have now, and now we'll have a little fun. We'll go to Andy Kennedy in a second, former Ole Miss basketball coach. Still kind of weird saying that. On the Billy's Pecans hotline. Before we do that, though, I'll tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Community Mortgage. Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, streaming local underwriting that understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing in Oxford. And you get the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. Did you know State Farm has a bank? It allows them to do auto financing. Recently, State Farm had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies, your rental properties, any insurance needs you may have. If you just want to compare rates, go on to Google, read the Romero Miller State Farm reviews, and then call Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. Rates as low as 4.9%. Terms that extend to 7 years. Loan amounts up to $100,000. Credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. Podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com. or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Superlawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a great one when you get Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800.
Now, Andy Kennedy on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
All right, Andy, really appreciate you being with us. We'll get to the tournament and all of that in a minute. First, I know we haven't really talked to you since you did your first batch of television there at the SEC tournament in St. Louis. I heard lots of positive feedback, lots of raving feedback about your performance there. But I'm curious, how much did you like television the first time that you did extended TV like that?
You know what? It was enlightening on a lot of fronts. I do enjoy it. I enjoy being a part of the tournament. To me, tournament basketball, you know, starting in the conference tournaments and then leading into the postseason tournaments, it's the best time of the year, and there's a lot of excitement. And so, you know, I'd always been a part of that in a different stance, obviously. So I was, number one, I was excited about the opportunity. Number two, you know, I've obviously done a lot of television on the other side of the dial. I had never you know, been the guy asking the questions. So that was very educational. When you go through something like the SEC tournament, you got to understand it's almost like going through two-a-days, you know, fall camp, because there's so much going on. And, you know, you're talking about game after game after game, live. It's not one game. I ended up covering around 10 games or so. So it was good for me to get an understanding of how it works on the other side of the camera. I enjoyed it. The people that I was working with, I've known obviously from being a coach for a number of years, and they were all tremendous in helping me through it. And I just had fun with it, guys. You know, sometimes I think we all take ourselves a little too seriously. I think I've got a lot of faults. I don't think that's one of them. I do think that, you know, just having an opportunity to give and take and see it from a different perspective, which was something that I enjoyed.
Is that something that you think you want to do long term, or have you even come close to making that decision since the events of the spring, where obviously you've been a head coach for 13 seasons and suddenly you're not? Have you had a chance to really think about, is that something you want to explore further?
You know what it is? I've had a lot of people reach out, and I don't know how long it's been now, 3-4 weeks since I haven't been a part of a team, maybe 3 weeks, I don't know, but I've had a lot of people reach out and say, hey, man, I hope you're relaxing and enjoying yourself and getting a good night's sleep. And I'm like, well, I'm really not, because I don't know how to do that. I've never really been, you know, a normal human being as it relates to doing normal things. I've always just kind of been a grinder as a coach. So I'm just now starting to process, you know, what does this look like? Again, the television avenue is something that I think there are going to be opportunities moving forward. As you said, Neil, I've had some good conversations with the decision makers behind the scenes, see, you know, what is next, if anything. And then, you know, the college basketball landscape, you know, we're right now in a situation where there's going to be change. There's change, you know, happen each and every day. And I've had some conversations in regards to that as well. So I'm just trying to figure out what it looks like moving forward. I'm blessed to be in a situation where I've got some options, and now I've just got to, you know, me and my family, we've got to process some things and see what happens.
Yeah, you mentioned not being able to relax. I mean, your phone has rang. Are you worried about 13 dudes and how many ever recruits for how many ever years? What has the last couple of weeks been like? I mean, have you been able to put something on the grill and just kind of chill? I mean, what have you done?
I'm working through that. You know, initially you go through the administrative change of you know, moving out of your office, and I've been in that office for 12 years, so it's a lot of moving, and then, you know, switching over your electronic devices, whether it be your computer, your phone, and, you know, you're going through all of this, you know, semantics of making a transition. And then, you know, you step back, and I jumped right into the deal in St. Louis where it was a 3 or 4 day sprint. And literally the last day there, I think I was doing something on either the television or the radio outlet for like 16 hours. Then I come back, and for the first time in my life, and this is the truth, the first time in my life since high school, I think I had one in high school, but I had a spring break. I've never had a spring break in my life simply because I've always been enthralled in basketball. And I took my daughters, one's a junior at Samford and the other's a senior at Oxford High. Their spring break coincided where it was the same. So we all went to the beach. So I went down to the beach for a week. I've never done the beach on spring break. Have you guys ever done that?
It's kind of cold at spring break.
It's very cold. It was awkward. And I'm a beach person. I love the beach. But it was kind of weird down there. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, this is what you get. You know, this time of year, it was kind of cold, kind of windy, different vibe. But nonetheless, that was good. And then, obviously, I'm a basketball Jones. And I've got a lot of friends in the tournament. And so I've been watching these games and staying abreast of different things. I've done some different radio outlets or some other TV opportunities that I'm contemplating. So, you know, we're just trying to figure out what's next. Obviously, there'll be a move in our future, and we're trying to figure out, you know, how, when, and where. And, so, you know, the relaxing part hadn't come yet. I hope that it does.
I don't know how you can have the lifestyle that you've had. I mean, because you were an assistant before that, which may even be more of a grind sometimes than being a head coach. You have all that, and then suddenly you have to slow down. A lot of people just don't know how.
Well, I think it does take a little while to kind of figure it out. And my wife and I were joking recently that I almost feel guilty not grinding because that's all I know. You know, we're all programmed to look at things through our own lens, and I almost kind of feel guilty that I'm not working 20 hours a day. Because here's what happens to a coach under normal circumstances. If you know, we lose to whenever it is, conference tournament, postseason, what have you, the very next day, it's not as if you sit back and you say, man, okay, let's reevaluate what just transpired. You immediately jump into a recruiting period. So you're on a plane, you're in a car, you're doing something to go and look at prospects or try to sign guys for the spring period. So that's what every college basketball coach is doing now. So you do that through the end of March, and then there's a number of events throughout the month of April that you go and attend to be a year ahead of the cycle. So you're going evaluating prospects, not necessarily for next year's team, but for down the road. So really a basketball coach does not have an opportunity to exhale until May-ish. And then when you go through a transition, such as the one at Ole Miss, then you really don't even have that because you're just still trying to get your arms around your new situation. So it is a change of lifestyle for me. And again, I'm trying to figure out exactly what that looks like.
I want to get to the tournament again in a minute because the Sweet 16 starts tomorrow. Ole Miss has obviously hired a friend of yours in your former job, Kermit Davis. I know you guys go way back, have a lot of mutual friends. I suspect that the two of you have talked some about the job and that kind of thing. What were your thoughts on Ole Miss's hiring of Kermit Davis? What kind of a fit do you think that is?
Number one, Kermit, I go back to literally the 1980s. I mean, a long, long time. And he is an outstanding coach. He really is. He did a great job at middle. He has a real understanding of what that job was about and how to go about making it successful. And he certainly did that in a big, big way. He and I are friends, we have had a couple of conversations, you know, as he was transitioning into the position. I've said before, I'm a lot of things. I've got a lot of faults, but the one thing that I try to pride myself on, I'm not a petty person. I don't want to see, you know, as typically is the case, well, Coach Lee is who wants the program to crash and burn. I do not want that to happen. I take great pride in the foundation by which we have laid here, and I do believe that Kermit is a guy that can help take it to the next level. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to do that to the degree that we all wanted, but I do believe that Kermit has an understanding of the state. He has an understanding of this footprint in the Southeast. He'll figure out his personnel and put in a style of play that gives him a chance to be successful. I have no doubt in that.
The other hire that got made was yesterday. You and I talked about it briefly in St. Louis. I told you I thought it was coming. I think you did too. Penny Hardaway gets the Memphis job. It kind of happened somewhat quickly, at least behind the scenes. It almost, these my words, not yours, it almost feels like a coup a little bit. Tubby Smith kind of gets run out quickly there, and then they bring Penny in. A lot of pomp, a lot of circumstance. Already there's been a recruit change that's happened. It looks like there's going to be more. I know there's more to that decision there than just basketball. There were some financial aspects. Do they have to get bodies in seats there at FedEx Forum? He's never been a college coach. What's he in for in terms of the transitioning to becoming the guy that's running a college basketball program?
Well, first and foremost, I have incredible respect for Tubby Smith. I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the true gentlemen of our sport. I had the pleasure when I got this job in the Ole Miss job in 06, his youngest son, Brian, was a part of our program. I'll tell you a quick story. Brian came to Ole Miss as a walk-on. You know, obviously, Tubby had coached Gigi and Saul. Gigi was his point guard at Georgia, and then Saul was his point guard at Kentucky. And so Brian is on the Ole Miss team, and he came as a walk-on, and then Coach Barnes had put him on scholarship. So as I get the job, one of the first conversations I had to have as a rookie coach in the SEC with Tubby Smith, who, you know, had just recently won a national title at Kentucky, one of the most powerful men in the business, was, hey, man, I really like Brian a part of this team, but boy, I need that scholarship. You mind paying for it away? So that was one of the first conversations I had to have. And Tubby was, I've known Coach Smith from when I was at Cincinnati with Hugs, and he obviously was a Kentuckian. We actually played in the NCAA tournament, and they were dear friends. They'd done some charity work together, so I'd known Coach Smith. So it wasn't that awkward a conversation, but it wasn't easy to ask the guy, the elder statesman in the league, to take his son off scholarship. But anyway, we've developed a relationship throughout the course of the year. Again, great, great respect for him. I hate that it had to go down for him like that. But momentum is a real thing. You know, I just experienced it myself. You know, if you think about our situation where we'd had some positive momentum, we'd finished the year prior pretty strong, and we'd won two NIT road games, and one of which at Syracuse. We came home and played in front of a packed house, sellout crowd, standing room only against the Georgia Tech team, didn't play very well, and didn't get an opportunity to go to New York City. And then some, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 months later, whatever it was, you know, changes in the air. And I think, you know, momentum in a program is real, and it's hard to create, but it's easy to lose. And for whatever reason, the powers that be at Memphis felt like the momentum needed to change. Penny, obviously, is a legend in that city. He was a great, great player. I've had an opportunity to know him as well. You know, Tony Matlock, who was on our staff at Ole Miss for the last 4 or 5 years, he and Penny had played together at Memphis. Penny, obviously, is coaching one of the best AAU programs that bears his name in Team Penny. So we had a lot of players that we recruited. He was at East High School. I think they just won their third straight state championship. So we've been in his situation a lot, and that trying to recruit players that were under him. He's been on our campus a number of times. He's a great guy. I do think he's a little different than some of the comparisons that have been made with other former great NBA players and the struggle that they've had to make as it relates to grinding and being successful as a college coach, because he has done it. through the AAU and the high school level. Obviously, the Memphis situation is completely different. I think people underestimate the scrutiny and the day-to-day hype that is Memphis basketball, and I think they're trying to regain some of that, and they felt like Penny was the best way to do so.
Yeah, Brian had the steal in 07 that set up the clearance shot, didn't he? Remember that, right? LSU?
Steal from Big Baby. That's right, from Big Baby.
Yeah.
Big Baby tried to throw it cross court. Brian Smith, it baited him into it, just like Richard Sherman, then just runs across there and makes the big steal, passes to Abernathy in the headband. Abernathy and Clay Sanders in the corner. Good. Tim Brando doing the call. I can still hear it.
Yeah, that's right. It was Valentine's night. I remember that.
Where were you? No, I was not actually.
I had my first Valentine's with what is my current wife now, actually, that night.
Y'all didn't go to basketball?
How about that?
Did not go to basketball.
You didn't go to the Rebels game?
I'm sorry.
That's a shocker.
I'm sorry.
Where were you, Neil? That would have been February of 07-ish, I think. Where were you?
I was still in Mobile. I was probably at some Alabama or Auburn or LSU game that night. That was back when I was covering the league as a whole.
I was thinking Floribama. You weren't at Floribama?
No, I wasn't a big Floribama person. I'm one of the very few people that thinks Floribama is overrated. Are you a Floribama person?
Oh, no, but you have to do it. It's like almost like, you know, you got to experience it. I've experienced it a few times. It's been years ago. Now that I've got some free time, I may go back. I've experienced Floribama to the fullest.
Yeah,
that's for another podcast.
Yeah, that's for another day. I've done that as well, but the last couple of times I was at the Floribama, I was 10 minutes in, I was ready to go. Something about it wasn't not my speed, but maybe that's just part of getting older.
Sure. I haven't been since the '90s, so I'm sure it's changed a bit. As have I. I hope.
Yeah, it was a lot more fun when I was in my 20s than it was when I was in my 40s. That was that's my Floribama observation. I suspect that many people share it. When you look back, by the way, I'm curious, we're going to turn it right now, but when you look back on your tenure at Ole Miss, what was the most fun time? Was it the beginning when you guys were sort of the little engine that could and you had all the little pieces, or was it, could you actually enjoy the Marshall Henderson era despite the fact that Marshall was a lot of fun, I would suspect, on the floor, probably not quite as much fun off the floor? I mean, when you look back on it, what was the most fun?
You know, the greatest memory is obviously, you know, the run that we made to win the 2013 SEC championship. It's hard to believe. I was watching Kentucky win, I guess, for the fifth straight time in St. Louis a week or so ago. The last team other than Kentucky to have won it was us in 13. And we caught Kentucky at the right time because Nerlens Noel had torn his ACL and was out of the tournament. So we didn't have to face them. We were going to have to face them in the second round in the semifinals. But Vanderbilt upset them in Nashville, if you remember that, because they were minus Nerlens Noel and they weren't quite the same team without him. And we were fortunate we took advantage, because I was saying that to some guys, you know, last week at the tournament, that, hey, man, you know, this year, you know, Kentucky is not as dominant as they have been, so somebody's got an opportunity to get this tournament. Because what have they won, like 31 or some crazy number, but now five straight. So, and lo and behold, and I told Cal this, I think John Calipari may have done his best coaching job at Kentucky with the team that he's got this year and what they were able to do. And then, again, lo and behold, they sweep through and get the tournament again. So 2013 was without question the highlight as it relates to memories. You know, we talked about this before. Winning a regular season championship in basketball and football, whatever it may be, is without question the hardest thing to do, much more difficult than winning the tournament. Because in the tournament, it's, you know, 3 games in 3 days, 4 games in 4 days, whatever it may be. But there's no more climactic of a moment than it is winning it, because it's instantaneous. Like, for instance, Auburn and Tennessee shared the regular season championship. So before their first game, they go out and they get handed the trophy and they take a picture as they're warming up to play their tournament game amid less hoopla. You win the conference tournament, you know, it happens immediately. You know, you win the game, streamers drop, commissioner hands you a trophy, you're cutting down nets. Those are the best moments in basketball. So I felt very, very fortunate to have an opportunity to experience that at the highest level. I've told you guys before, you know, I'm an SEC guy, man, born and raised in this state, grew up following the state. And so for me to have an opportunity to be an SEC champion is something that I will cherish forever. So that was a highlight. The early years, believe it or not, it certainly was a grind. It's always a grind. And one of the things that I'm sure as I am reflecting a bit now that I will regret is the fact that I didn't enjoy the victories as much as the losses destroy you. But I just think that's kind of the mindset of a coach, and you literally just have to kind of keep moving forward. You don't have an opportunity to look back and reflect until you're in a situation such as I am now. So great memories from that first team that had never experienced a winning season. I'll never forget flying in and never having, you know, obviously met the guys that are on the current team. Todd Abernathy was in that room. Jeremy Pardell was in that room. Dwayne Curtis, Bam Doan, Clarence Sanders, Brian Smith, to name a few. And to meet those guys really for the first day as I'm about to be introduced as the new coach, and nobody in that room had ever experienced a winning season. Forget about SEC. They'd never experienced a winning season. So for that first group to then turn and to win a share of the SEC West and to get to the postseason and really start creating that elusive momentum and allowing us to build the TUI Center, which led to the building of the pavilion. Those first few years were special in turning the tide and reestablishing who we wanted to be as a program. And then there was a lot of good moments, a lot of disappointments, but the highs far outweighed the lows.
Take a break in our talk with Andy Kennedy to tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. MasterCutsLawn.com is a place to take part of a couple podcast-only deals they have going on right now for pressure washing, including $50 off a pressure washing job of more than 2,000 square feet. Or if you sign an annual contract, they'll pressure wash your driveway and sidewalks for free. Big time difference there once you get it done. Again, 662-607-7773 or mastercutslawn.com.
Andy Kennedy is joining us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. As Chase has told you, at Billy's Pecans, they handle the detail. It leaves you just to handle the thank yous. At Billy's Pecans, they know the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, Billy's Pecans will handle it all with expertise and excellence, and with their signature Southern style, and with items at every price point, you simply can't choose wrong. Consider the assorted gift bag, the best-selling party trio, pecans and chocolate, so much more. Billy's Pecans will customize your packaging with your company or organization's logo affixed as a sticker to their round boxes, so your brand is front of mind and their decadent flavors are there to back it up. It's BilliesPecans.com. That's B-I-L-L-I-E-S Pecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that is the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan here on the podcast at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. And the podcast is brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades, and absolutely no one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry does. Go to his sites, harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. The results that you get are updated daily, which is awfully important this time of year as the real estate market heats up in the spring. And then you send him an email. He'll take care of the rest. It's ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Andy Kennedy on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Let's get to the tournament. The Sweet 16 starts tomorrow. You mentioned the little engine that could, Kentucky. Somehow, some way, the Cats have found a way into the Sweet 16. I don't know how they do it, but there they are, and there's not a lot in their way to get to San Antonio. Kansas State, Loyola of Chicago, and Nevada. Loyola's one hell of a cool story, but you got to think they're starting to – Cinderella's – the clock's about to strike. Can any of that group K-State, Loyola, or Nevada, can they keep Kentucky out of this?
I think if you were laying odds, and I'm sure somebody is somewhere.
safe bet.
I would, that would be a safe bet, I think. I think that Kentucky would be the favorite in a four-team tournament of those four. However, the NCAA tournament shows you one thing, and that anything's possible, and you don't necessarily have to be the best team. That's why, and I know Neil's an NBA guy, that's why the NBA players are so different, because you got to beat somebody four times in order to advance. In the NCAA tournament, you just got to be the best team for about 2.5 hours. And obviously, all three of those other teams have shown very capable, starting with K-State from the Big 12. Battle tested, have been through it before, and they got really good guard play, so it gives them a chance. And then, you know, Loyola and Nevada—that's what tournament basketball is all about, isn't it? What an incredible run for both those guys, and I know them both well. You know, I was as I'm watching the games, I could literally tell you stories about most every team and on a personal level because I know all these guys. Porter Mosier's a friend of mine, man. What a great run that he's had. His road to get back to this is incredible. Great guy, and I'll be honest with you, you know, it's a little different than the UMBC Cinderella journey because you look at UMBC and you say, okay, wow, what an incredible win they had against Virginia, one of the best moments in the history of the NCAA tournament. But then you just see a lot of flaws when you start examining them. Based on any size, their depth is questionable. You know, what was their point guard? He weighed 132 pounds. I mean, there's only so much. There's only so far you don't go with that. But when you look at Loyola, I see a good basketball team. You know, this was a team that back in December went into Florida, and Florida was playing as well as anybody at that time and really controlled the game, tapped the buzzer, and won. They got size. They got veteran guards. They got guys that can go make plays off the bounce. So I see a very good basketball team, not a fluke. And then you look at Nevada, and Nevada is a team that athlete-wise can match up with Kentucky. They're not as long. They're not as big at the basket, but they've got really good guards. Eric Musselman has done a tremendous job. You know, I work for his father. Did you know that?
I didn't.
I actually work for Bill Musselman. I could tell you, I worked for him for about 6 weeks, and over those 6 weeks, I've got a lifetime of stories. What an amazing guy.
Is that when he was at South Alabama?
Correct. How about this? I'm at South Alabama. My first venture into coaching, I played. I tore my right ACL in Puerto Rico over the summer. There's a league over there called the Superior League, and it paid pretty good money. It paid you black market money, straight cash, which I don't know about. And I played, and I tore my right ACL. Remember a guy named Jose Vargas played at LSU?
Yeah.
Dominican big. He could palm a basketball with two fingers. That was his claim to fame. Well, we're playing in Puerto Rico. He's on the other team. He switches a ball screen. I try to cross and go by him, felt something unusual, fall to the ground. Boom, career's over. Tore my right ACL. Now, I'd already torn my left. It was my fifth, and now I've had six. But it was my fifth and last surgery at the time as a player. So I said, hey, man, I don't know anything but basketball. I ran around trying to get a job. I got hired at South Alabama. Well, I knew that Coach Errol, Ronnie Errol, who was the coach at the time, was on the hot seat a bit. I didn't know it was scalding hot. I walked into a situation, and literally 2 months later, we're 1-3, and he gets fired as we're getting off the bus. So we go through the year on an interim basis. They do a coaching search in the spring, and lo and behold, Bill Musselman is named the head coach. And so I was his driver / assistant coach / sous chef. I mean, I was doing it all for him. I did it all for about 6 weeks with Coach prior to me coming back to UAB and him having actually some initial real success at South Alabama. So I've known Eric a long time as well, man. Happy for both those guys. And again, my money would be on the Cats if I was a betting man. However, those other three teams are very capable.
Musselman's going to have his shot at some different jobs out that part of the country here in a couple of weeks, I'm guessing, right?
I would think so. I don't really know what's open out west, but I would think whatever is, he's got to be at the top of that list. And you know how this works. A lot of times there needs to be a change, and there may not be a definitive plan as to who the successor is going to be. But when you're in a situation like this, I'm sure there's already been some backroom talks as to, hey, man, if we make this move, will you be our next guy? And we could see something like that occur.
Not to bring up a bad memory, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago, people were talking about Billy Kennedy saying that they're the most underachieving team in the country. They've got all this talent. Yeah, they got some injuries, but they ought to be better than this. Brian Tyree has a shot that's several inches down before it pops back out. If that shot falls, we might be having a really different conversation right now about a number of things, Texas A&M included. But as it is, they're in the Sweet 16. They've got Michigan on, I guess that's tomorrow night, out in L.A., Florida State and Gonzaga on the other side of that bracket. I guess just kind of first just your thoughts sort of on the Aggies and where they are now and how far can this team go in terms of talent. They're as talented as, especially in the front court, they're as talented as any team in the country.
You know, I agree. When I guess in the preseason, we do a coach's poll preseason, whatever. And I had predicted them to win the league. I thought that they were going to win the regular season. And then based on some injuries, as you said, and then based on some self-inflicted wounds of suspensions, what have you, they were really never whole for a long period of time. As a matter of fact, when we went in and reflecting back on that shot that went in and out on Bree, that could have changed the course of a lot of people's seasons, of course. I think they were 0-4, 0-5 going into that. And,
yeah.
You know, it was obviously kind of a do-or-die game for them, and I don't remember where we were. I think we were just coming off a win against Alabama.
Y'all were three and two in the league that night. If that shot falls, you're 4-2 in the league and in a completely different mindset.
Yeah, completely different game. And, they were struggling a bit because they'd gotten off to a slow start. But, listen, number one, Billy Kennedy is a good guy, man. He's a really good guy. I'm really pulling for him personally. I've known him for a long, long time since his days back at Southeast Louisiana, and then we played him when he was at Murray State. And I know expectation for this group was really high. If you think about it, they turned it with a recruiting class. I think three of those kids played at the same high school, DJ Ho, Tyler Davis, and maybe Armon Gilder. I had Armon Gilder. How do you say his name? Sorry to the Gilder family. But those three guys came in, and if you remember, as freshmen, they had that improbable comeback against Northern Iowa, where Northern Iowa was up like 12 with like 2 seconds to play. Something crazy, right? You remember that?
Yeah.
And so it got A&M to the Sweet 16. So everybody says, oh, man, this is the run. This is the beginning of an incredible 3-4 year run with this group of kids. Well, then last year, they were right around 500, no postseason. This year, they kind of limp into the NCAA tournament. I thought their seed was pretty good. And then they make this run, and I think they're really playing well. Their front court, as you said, Neil, is as athletic and as deep as any in the country, and they're getting adequate guard play. TJ Starks, who I think had a really good SEC tournament, he made the shot against Alabama. You're talking about something that could have changed the tide, pardon the pun, was, you know, TJ Starks comes off a ball screen, jumps up, knocks down a big three before Colin Sexton hit one of the most improbable shots in the history of the SEC tournament, which allowed Alabama to win. Which then they go and they crush Auburn in the second round, which gets Alabama to the tournament. And fortunately for them, they won the game. So they completely transformed the outlook of that program moving forward. But Texas A&M, again, with the emergence of TJ Starks at the point, have now kind of settled into who they are. And they are a sleeper team to get to the Final Four. John Beilein has done an incredible job at Michigan, another group that just year in and year out, all they do is win. So that'll be an intriguing game, a match of polar opposites to see who can get to the Elite Eight.
How's Mark Few done this at Gonzaga? I mean, I know they play in a different league, and no one even really notices them. And that was years ago, and people said, well, they're never going to make a tournament run. Well, they have made tournament runs. And I mean, he's doing this in Spokane, Washington. You're in the field. How's he pulled that off? How's he been able to get that type of talent to – I know he's done some transfers and some stuff like that, but they've now gotten to a place where they're perennially a power. That was almost impossible to predict a decade ago.
Yeah, he's done an incredible job. And you're talking about a guy that's comfortable in his own skin. Again, I've known Mark Few. He was when I was at UAB, I transferred to UAB in 1987. So I had to sit out the 87-88 year via transfer rules. And we had a grad assistant at the time named Dan Munson. Dan was Don Munson, the Bear at Oregon. It was Don Munson's son. So Dan Munson was the GA. And so we spent a lot of time in the gym together in my sit out year, working on my game, what have you. Dan then leaves at the end of his GA stint and goes to Gonzaga and was an assistant coach at Gonzaga with a guy named Mark Few. Well, then Dan becomes the head coach and Few is his assistant. So again, we go back to the 80s knowing each other. And you're talking about a guy, again, comfortable in his own skin. He's turned down, you know, literally he could have his pick of any of the blue blood jobs that he's wanted over the last 4 or 5 years. He is comfortable in Gonzaga. He has built a program that year in and year out are going to give themselves a chance to compete for a national championship. They were ever so close to getting it last year. And I think that kind of got the proverbial monkey off their back and has allowed them to play loose and free, getting really good players. They've really done a great job in the international market, especially with bigs. And then he, as you said, he's mixed and matched. He's taken transfers. He took a kid, you know, from Missouri, from just up the road, who recruited him heavily, Jonathan Williams, J3, who goes to Missouri out of high school and then transferred. Now he's at Gonzaga playing like an all-league player. And so he understands his program. He understands what it takes to put a team together to make a run in March. And he's a guy that now, year in and year out, they're going to be right in the mix.
Your buddy Bob Huggins and Villanova, that's Friday night. The other side of that bracket's a really good game that nobody really talks about. Purdue, Texas Tech could be a lot of fun to watch. Can Huggs and the Mountaineers, can they knock off Nova?
Well, I know he's not listening. It's a little too early for him out there. But I think Villanova's the best team in the tournament. I think their guard play is outstanding. And you got to have good guard play if you're going to have a chance to beat West Virginia. And they've got, you know, the best point guard, in my opinion, in college basketball, and Jalen Brunson, who just kind of goes about his business and wins games. He's strong, which you have to be strong with the ball, with the way that West Virginia is going to apply pressure. He makes good decisions. They knock down shots. And they're another group. I mean, think about what Jay Wright has done at Villanova. Incredible. And I think they're poised to make another real run and get them an opportunity to get their second title in, I guess, 3 years. So I think Villanova is the best team standing in the tournament from my own, you know, observations. Obviously, West Virginia is going to be relentless in their attack. I think the outcome of that game, a lot will have to do with the immediate tone set by the officiating and how tough they allow West Virginia to play. And I've been pleasantly surprised with the physicalness of the NCAA tournament. I'm like you guys, man, it drives me crazy what they're doing with this replay stuff. I mean, just talking about taking the air out of the ball. And I know we all want to be right, but come on, man. I mean, they can see that sometimes it takes the momentum away from the game. But I think if they allow the game to be physical, which I think for the most part they've allowed in the NCAA tournament, then I think obviously West Virginia has a fighter's chance. I just again, think Villanova is the better team.
The only thing I hate, and I agree with you, I kind of like the way they've officiated the tournament. They're letting guys play. They're not determining games. But, damn, they don't do that November, December, January, February. They call a completely different game. As someone who tries to watch more college basketball than I do, because I end up watching a lot of NBA, as we talked about, until last night, and after last night, it's going to be a little while before I can watch an NBA game, thanks to the Thunder and the Celtics and the free throws. But anyway, if they would call the game that way the whole year, I think the college game would be more entertaining to the casual fan.
Yeah, you know, it's a million-dollar question. It'll continue to be talked about. You know, the officiating business is a completely different business. And, again, we could talk for hours on that. But there's not one unifying body. And so, therefore, different supervisors are saying different things. And they're all trying to get it right. You know, I've never been a real guy that does a lot of complaining about officials, because at the end of the day, they get a lot of them right. We all see things through the glasses of the team in which we support, but the reality is it's a difficult job, and they do a good job for the most part. There's just no one set of, hey, this is how we're doing things. So throughout the course of the year, you're going to just get a different whistle based on where you're playing, who you're playing, and who's doing the game.
I think everybody in the college basketball world is preparing for the Sunday game between Kansas and Duke. they both have to get through a game first. Duke's got to get through Syracuse. I think they beat them by 50 or something the last time they played. And Kansas has to get through Clemson.
I'll tell you, I'll take the under on that 50 this time.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's just Duke looks awfully good. Kansas looks awfully good. Clemson just destroyed Auburn, just beat the shit out of them in every facet of the game, which is another topic for probably another day. But can either one of those teams prevent a Kansas-Duke matchup? And if we get to Kansas and Duke, who do you like in that one?
Well, I'll tell you this. You distracted me when you used the S-H-I-T word. I didn't know you could do that. I'm learning. I mean, are you telling me I can curse on here?
I'll get in trouble a little bit. But, yeah, you now at least can use one before you're the bad guy.
I got to say, I mean, is that allowed? I mean, I've been under a lot of it.
Well, I mean,
when I'm talking to the media, they frown on using that. But
that was a hell of a beatdown, though, Andy. I'm not sure that PG would have properly described how bad it was.
I think the emphasis was placed properly. However, I just didn't know it was around. So I'm just trying to make sure I understand the rules. Let me write this down real quick. Syracuse, it's amazing. Think about this now. Jim Boeheim, who's probably lived on the bubble as much as anybody since our Carmelo, Jerry McNamara, Hakeem Warrick days, about to winning the national title. Syracuse on the bubble every year. You know, technically, I guess the chair of the committee said they were the last team in, and here they are again in the Sweet 16. I think the last time that they were one of the last teams in, would they end up in the Final Four? Did they not?
Yeah.
That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, went as like an 11 seed to the Final Four.
Yeah, people talk about that zone, like, hey, man, we're going to go in here and, you know, play against the zone, yada, yada, yada. It's easier said than done. You know, we went in there last year and saw it firsthand in the Carrier Dome. And we made a bunch of shots. And you got to make shots because they're just not going to give you anything free. Their rotations are different. They're so long and they're so athletic. And they just understand. They put guys in positions where guys don't typically want to be. And as a result, no one can score. And, you know, no one can score on them. I think Duke has the makeup of a team that they're so skilled at so many positions, especially with Marvin Bagley, that they're going to be able to get quality shots. And then it's just a matter of make or miss. I like Duke in that game, but don't be surprised if Syracuse makes it a lot more competitive than I think people are giving them an opportunity to do. The other side of the bracket is who? Kansas and
Clemson.
What a job Brad Brownell has done. He was like me a little bit. I mean, they're both giving us the blindfold and the cigarette and. You know, they were playing taps moving into the year. They went ahead and lit mine and K-Sarah with him. He can tell what a – and he's a friend of mine who has done an incredible job against tough circumstances. Got off to a good start, survived a little bit of a lull, which you're going to have in a league as competitive as the ACC and the SEC. And as you said, I have been really impressed with his team. I hadn't seen them too much throughout the course of the year. I watched them against New Mexico State. Who had a really, really talented team, athletes. Chris Jans has done a really good job, and they really controlled that game. I thought New Mexico State was a team that could have possibly upset them as you look at it on paper, but Clemson never gave them an opportunity to do so by controlling the game, and then they just, as you said, they just dismantled Auburn. I think the Auburn thing, unfortunately for Bruce and his team and the SEC, you know, the league champion was not at full strength when they lost Macklemore a week or so to go in the regular season. They were just so depleted up front. This was a guy that was on the All-SEC defensive team. He was leading the SEC in block shots. They were small throughout the course of the season. And then when they lost his presence at the basket, I really think it put them in a spot where they were just never the same. And I think the way they finished the year was indicative of that. But then Clemson just dismantles them. Kansas is a team very similarly built, with one exception inside, but similarly built to Auburn, when they're going to spread you and shoot it. And Clemson had a lot of success in that regard against Auburn. So I think that game is one that you need to put on your upset alert label, even though how can you bet against Bill Self? Guys won 14 straight Big 12 championships. That is mind-boggling. In a league as competitive as that, what he does year in and year out, and I think he's the epitome of what a great coach looks like in that he changes his style based on personnel. He obviously recruits to a system, But then he had to make a complete 180 turn in the way in which they schematically go about winning games, and he did it and won the Big 12 again. And here he is back in the Sweet 16. And again, that to me is the definition of what a great coach does.
Yeah, they're really talented, but yeah, they just find ways. Like, there were times this year that people were saying, hey, Kansas is going to fall off a little, and then they just don't.
They just don't. Devontae Graham, I think, is a guy that should be in the National Player of the Year conversation. I don't know if anybody's going to get it from Trae Young because, he led the nation in scoring and assists. I don't know if that's ever happened, but and he had so much fanfare, justifiably so early. He'll probably be National Player of the Year, but I think Devontae Graham's a guy that is that has done wonders for that program. Malik Newman, obviously we're very, very familiar with Malik, recruited him hard here. He goes to state and he transfers, and he kind of was finding his way early as to where his shots come from, how does he fit into this team, and he's really playing well since they've been into tournament play, meaning Big 12 tournament and now NCAA tournament. He's making shots, and he gives them another option with Graham and the other kid who I'm not even going to think about pronouncing his name, but the foreign kid, I think he's from Ukraine, who is a tremendous shooter as well. But I think based on what Clemson just went through with their matchup with Auburn, it gives them a chance.
Hey, kind of last thing. I'm curious. I know you watch more of the college game than you watch the NBA, but I know you watch a lot of NBA as well. If you're Memphis, if you're Phoenix, if you're one of these organizations that's probably going to have the first pick, the second pick in the draft, who out of all of these guys, Ayton, Sexton, all the guys that get mentioned, Bagley, the guys that get mentioned as the first pick in the draft, is there one guy that sort of captures your fancy more than the others?
To me, it's a two-dog race, and it just depends on need. But I think the draft is going to be really, really loaded at the top because you got a number of young, talented players. But if it was me, not knowing specific need of the team in which is going to have the pick, it's a two-dog race in Bagley and Ayton. When I see what Ayton's been able to do, he reminds me of a Joel Embiid, and Embiid's got a chance to potentially be an MVP candidate in the NBA in time. And I see a guy that honestly is way further along in his progression at the same stage. They're both physically built similar. I think Ayton's a better athlete. So for my money, he would probably be the first pick, but I think Marvin Bagley's got a skill set that transfers very easily to the next level, and I see him being a multiple-time NBA All-Star as well.
Just kind of curious before we let you go, Andy, where's that Christmas jacket at? You remember to pull that thing out when the holidays come around again? I like that thing.
I'm not sure. I'm definitely going to pull it out, and
all
I'm
right.
not sure that I'm going to just keep it to Christmas.
Ooh,
I think that thing is it can travel well. I'm working on a Scotchgard commercial as we speak. And I again, if they ever made what was it Christmas Vacation
yeah.
7, me and Chevy Chase, I think Chevy Chase would look good in that as well.
How many suits are in your closet?
Too many.
Yeah.
Too many. And what's crazy is, we all have our go-tos. Like, how many dress shirts do you guys? I know you guys don't wear dress shirts at most, but obviously as a coach, you got to wear a lot of dress shirts. So, and at the end of the day, I've got all these dress shirts, and I wear like four of them. So I'm thinking, what am I doing? Well, I'm anybody that's a 46 extra long, we may have a hell of a yard sale here on the Kennedy residence coming up pretty soon.
Are you superstitious at all when you go to certain shirts or jackets, depending on the game?
No.
Not at all?
I really don't. I'm not a superstitious guy. Now,
okay.
I'm a creature of habit, and I have routines. But not to get into a whole different realm, but I don't believe as a believer you can be superstitious. I don't think it's a thing, so I'm not superstitious.
Okay.
How did you go about each day? Was there did you pick your tie by feel? Was there a color scheme, or were you just one of those guys that grabs a tie?
It was just a feel thing. I think ties are pretty specific. I don't know if I've ever worn a tie that somebody gave me. It's all a specific. And I don't know if I've ever gone tie shopping. I walk in and I see a tie and I'm like, boy, I'm going to buy that. So it's all feel. It's all feel.
Good. Good enough.
Good enough. Chase is. There's been
right,
few people more obsessed with your yeah. We'll let you go. Few people more obsessed with your wardrobe than Chase Barham here. Hey, thanks for the time. Really, really enjoyed it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, as always, to Andy Kennedy. The podcast is brought to you in part as well by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. They're in Holly Springs. Give them a call, 662-252-2321. Great website to check out, whether it's Sildenafil or something more common that you need to take care of your health there with Tyson Drugs. Also, they're now in Oxford as well, at G&M Pharmacy. Bob Lomack and those guys owning G&M in Oxford on South Lamar. Great service. They deliver local, and they will take care of you. So, again, TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321.
Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. The Grove Bowl is April the 7th at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. We'll have more practice coverage coming to you on Thursday. I've got a Charles Clark story that I'm hoping to get to you at some point today or early tomorrow. Practice coverage on Thursday, and then practice again on Saturday morning in Oxford. So we'll get more of that to you as the week goes on. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The Moonlight Grahams will be playing Saturday, April the 28th at World Music Nashville in the Bellevue area at 7 p.m. The Moonlight Grahams are a folk Americana band started by Ole Miss grad John McCann. Tickets are $10. That includes a digital copy of the new album. The digital download cards will be given to you when you arrive at World Music Nashville. You can also buy tickets off their Facebook page or on TicketZone.com. So make sure you get your tickets before they sell out. You'll absolutely love it. Remember, their new album, The Moonlight Grahams, is out on Spotify and iTunes. Please make sure to follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And if you like, spread the word. Again, the show Saturday, April the 28th at World Music Nashville, 7 p.m. You don't want to miss The Moonlight Grahams.
Oh, boy, not much of a way for us to top Andy Kennedy in this in today's podcast. I'm good. I do not need him as my opening act. That does not work. So,
No, you need to be the opening act, and then you get out.
Just leave the arena, too. Like,
I've told him this for a long time. He's one of those guys that, and I don't know, because coaches are wired differently. You know, you coach for as long as you coach. And it's what you know. It's the body clock that you know. And they can't get out of it. You saw Tom Crean, for example, go to ESPN and did a really good job for a year. But I think he never could get coaching out of his blood. Landed a big job at Georgia with a ton of money.
I know you didn't listen to it when I was talking to David DeLucci about broadcasting and that being a career. He said that he gave an opinion on Andy Kennedy, and he said, you know, he's awesome at it. He's a natural. He'll be good at whatever he does. He goes, coaches, though, have hard times not impacting what they're watching. He said it's that impact and that drive that got them where they were as far as being a coach. And he said, you just can't replace that with anything. And he said that's why he expected. He goes, look, he goes, we'll see. He might love it. But he goes, his thought process was Andy would coach again just because of the impact.
Probably what I would bet, too, is that he's a guy that goes to, say, ESPN, gets kind of raises his profile. Because nothing against Ole Miss, but when you're the coach at Ole Miss, you're really only on the national stage when you're in a big game at Ole Miss. When you're on the national stage at ESPN, you're on the national stage all the time. Duke plays, Carolina plays, Kentucky plays, Kansas plays, you're there to talk about it. People start to listen to you. You get more exposure. It raises your profile. I think that happened with Tom Crean. I think it could easily happen with Andy Kennedy. And, yeah, I agree with David. As much as I think he would be very, very good as an analyst and that kind of thing, I suspect the coaching Jones will raise up and bite him in a year.
I mentioned earlier that I was at the Media Day event yesterday for the North Mississippi Classic, the Web.com Tour event. Locally in Oxford next month, the Country Club of Oxford, Braden Thornberry is going to play. There's going to be some local flavor there, so any golf fans, for hands of Braden, the defending NCAA national champion, he's in the event. I think they're given two unrestricted exemptions into the tournament, meaning they don't need to be web.com players or tour players or professionals or whatever, and Braden has received one of those, and deservedly so. So he will be in the field next month. When that starts at the Country Club of Oxford, that's April 18th to 22nd, 21st, I guess, is the dates. Maybe the 19th to the 22nd, whatever the Thursday to Sunday is of that week. And I have a feeling he will probably beat Mr. McCready's score by at least about 70 shots, maybe 80 shots.
I would think. I would think if that's the standard that's being held, they're all going to have a really good day.
All good days out at the place. So, we'll probably talk to Chris Malloy coming up in the next few days, week or so as well. We'll get Jeffrey tomorrow. What are we doing on Friday? You know yet? We know yet. We'll figure it out.
I don't know that we know yet.
Okay. We'll figure that out.
I'm one day at a time. I did podcast yesterday, and then this is the first of three today. So I'm just trying to get through.
You're doing a very Adam Carolla thing today. You're kind of running through some.
I had a day last week where I did four, and I finished, and I said, I don't know how the hell he does that.
Were you a little exhausted?
Well, I was tired of talking.
Yeah.
And like,
that's a problem when you have a family too, because the family wants to talk later, and you're kind of drained. Where I just don't really want to talk about it. I mean, we've discussed this in the podcast a lot. I mean, I'll make people in my family mad because like, hey, tell me what you did today. Do I have to? Can I just sit?
Yeah.
Tell me what you did. You talk. I'll listen.
Well,
you.
I think in fairness to me, where some of the antisocial stuff comes up, it's. It's not that I'm completely antisocial. I am, and I get worse by the week. But it's just that when you talk all day, sometimes what really sounds good is sitting in a quiet place and just chilling. I don't really want to have a conversation about the stuff that I just talked about all day long. Now, if someone came to me and said, hey, let's talk about something completely different than anything I've talked about, I'm kind of in. Okay.
Yeah.
But, hey, let's talk sports. No, let's not. And it's not me being, I know, it's not me meaning to be a jerk. It's just.
If I came up and wanted to, like, start analyzing sashimi or something, okay, we'll discuss it for a minute if I'd like.
Yeah, I'd be far more interested. Like, the guy at Snack Bar who got nominated for the James Beard.
Yeah, Fish.
Yeah, if he said, hey, I want to talk to you about my cooking methods and stuff, I'm in.
Let's talk.
Let's talk. I'm all ears, man. I am a captive audience.
Yeah.
But if you come up, hey, let's talk SEC football after I've done three podcasts on it that day, I don't know that I can.
Yeah.
And that's not being a jerk necessarily. And after last night, I mean, I don't even want to talk about basketball anymore. As much as I love it.
I saw that.
That was brutal.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you are what you are.
It's true.
One of the things that's true in sports about any team, it's like when you follow a team, like those of you who are enthralled in this Ole Miss baseball series, it's season, as you should be, because they're really good. What, 20-2?
20-2.
But whatever the flaws are, whatever that little nagging thing in the back of your mind that goes, man, I'll tell you, I do worry about a super regional win X, whatever that is, right? Those things, you can bet your everything you know, those things are going to pop up in a critical moment, and your team's either going to persevere through them or that's what's going to get you, and you're going to go, I always knew that's what would get us.
Yeah.
And with the Thunder all year, you know what it's been? Free throws. They've left they're 29th in the NBA in free throw percentage. And all year it's been free throws. And last night, Free throws. You hit your free throws down the stretch in that game to win. And a big win, because Portland lost. They would have been just a game out of third. As it is, they're only one game out of being out of the playoffs in the loss column.
This might be something we discuss tomorrow. I'll tease it here as we I'll look into it the rest of the day. I didn't read the story yet, just seeing Twitter. Football Scoop staff tweets, Dan Mullen explains why paying players a salary wouldn't work. Stephen Godfrey quote tweets it and says, well, Dan's right. Some of his players definitely do get an awful lot of benefits. So I'll, well, read that up. Maybe that's topic for tomorrow. So anyway, as always, again, thanks to Andy Kennedy for an extended amount of time today, as he was fantastic. And we will be back tomorrow. Talk to you then.